This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, fine. Right. Welcome to part two. Okay, so this is the Parsha slot. Parsha Shlach Lecha. What I've done is chosen three topics. I hope we get through all of them, but time will tell. Very interesting Parsha. And lots to talk about. I've taken three different ideas. The first two ideas I've stolen from Rabbi Frand. He has got in his latest Sefer, I don't know how recent it is, but he's got a koyach of taking material and presenting it and making it, the adjective I always look for is say overable. Yeah, say overable. You've got to have a Dvar Torah that you can say over at the Shabbos table that you're excited about. And he's got this koyach of finding material which is very say overable. So the first two items I've taken from him, and the third one is... the items one and three I've taken from him. Item number two I took from a different safe, I forget which. I normally attribute it, but I've forgotten where I saw it. But either way, let's start. So the first item in Parshas Shlach Lecha, of course, is going to be the discussion about the Meraglim. There's loads to discuss, but I want to just focus in on one very interesting point. And again, there's a life message. There's a very important take-home from this aspect of the Meraglim. The Pasuk says, when the Meraglim, the 10 out of 12, report back, one of the Pesukim, one of the sentences which they say is this, V'shom ro'inu, we went into Eretz Yisrael, and over there we saw, es hanafilim b'nei anok, these giants, min hanafilim, that fell, whatever that means, not for now, v'anehi b'einenu k'chagovim, and we were in v'anehi b'einenu, and they were in our eyes like chagovim, locusts, grasshoppers. V'chein hoyinu b'neihem, and so were we in their eyes. In other words, we were like nothing. They were so massive and so big and scary that we were like grasshoppers compared to them. V'chein hoyinu b'neihem, and that's how they looked at us. Now the obvious question is, really, how do you know? How do you know that the inhabitants of the land said that you were like grasshoppers? You were tiny, nothing, I can step on you and eliminate you. How did they knew it, they had spies, they had they were mind readers. How did they know? So Rashi addresses the question. Rashi says on the Pasuk straight away, V'chein hoyinu b'einehem. Again, Rashi's asking a question. So often you just see a phrase in Rashi, you know, there's a safer out, what's bothering Rashi, right? So it's like I think it's written by Dr. Bonchek, which is like a psychological question. Like, what's bothering Rashi? So the point is that this is what's bothering Rashi. V'chein hayinu b'einehem, this is how they looked at us. In their eyes, they were like grasshoppers. How do they know? How did the Bnei Yisrael know? How did the Meraglim know? Says Rashi, that's the hidden question. Shamanu oimrim, we heard them say, "Nemolim yesh b'kromim ka'anoshim." There are these ants in the vineyards, like people. In other words, they're schnipsela, they're little kids in the vineyards. So Rashi answers the question by saying because they overheard them. Okay, but there's a different mahalach, there's a different approach, and that is a very important approach. You see, when a person sometimes feels, It's like a two-way street. If a person has got low self-esteem, a person doesn't feel confident about themselves, then often they'll think that other people will think the same way about them. If a person has a healthier self-esteem or feels more positively about something, then he'll rise to the occasion and people will sort of treat him in the way he treats himself almost. But if a person looks at himself, I'm just a grasshopper, I'm a nothing, I'm a locust, then that's how people will deal with you. A person who deals with himself a bit more confidently, a bit more openly and positively, then people will treat you on your level, the way you deal with yourself. So really what was lacking over here was because they said the first part of the sentence, "V'anehi be'einenu k'chagovim," we were nothing. So then, the natural corollary of that is, they'll treat you like chagovim. So that's how they knew v'chein hoyinu b'einehem. And I think, therefore, it's an important sort of springboard to discuss this very point. And that is, true anova, true humility, because a lot of people confuse it, and I see it in school the whole time, and it's very important to understand what is true anova and what is not true anova, what is false humility. Let me give you a moshel I always give the kids in school. I think it's the best way to do it, to convey the message. Imagine I'm doing a new school publication, and I want, let's say they're putting together a school Haggadah, and I say to the students, they're all going to write a Dvar Torah, and I need a volunteer to design a nice front cover. So I ask the kids, who here is a good artist? Now imagine there are two kids in the classroom who are fantastic artists. There's two responses I might get. One kid will turn around and say, look, I know, he'll think to himself, I'm a great artist, but I'm not putting my hand up and saying I'm a great artist. That's so arrogant. So modestly, he thinks, he'll keep his hand down, head down, and not acknowledge the fact that he's a good artist. Alternatively, the second person, the guy next to him, he could turn around and say, yeah, I'm a good artist, I'm happy to do this, and just raise his hand. Now, which one is correct? The correct approach? The first person, that is false modesty. He's just denying his talents. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the talents to draw, so draw. But like the second guy who puts up his hands and acknowledges that he's got this ability, just do it, but just don't show off about it. Just recognize whatever talents you have are gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's all. And this really is borne out from a very important paragraph in the Mesillas Yesharim. Take a look at paragraph 2. This is in Perek Chaf Beis of the Mesillas Yesharim, where he has a chapter called Biur Midas HaAnova, explaining what Anova is. So it says the Mesillas Yesharim, let's work through it because it's majestic. Omno, mi hu bal seichel yosha, someone who thinks logically, who has a brain in his head. Afilu im zocho liyas chochem godel muflug, he might merit to be this outstanding Talmud Chochem. Be'emes kashi yistakel v'yispoinin, if he thinks about it carefully, yira she'ein mokum legaiva v'lisnasus, there's no place for his arrogance and pride. Ki hine mishu bal seichel, someone who thinks carefully, sheyeda yosim acherim, and perhaps knows more than other people, ein oise ela shebechok tivolaseis, he's just using the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him. Ka'if shemagbia la'uf lefi shittiva bekach, like a bird who flies. You don't get a bird who flies in the sky, he's not going to show off, hey, look at me, I can fly. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu made that bird. So he flies, flaps his wings, and just flies. He's not going to show off about it, that's what he does. Well, so too, a person who's got any koyach from Hashem, any ability, he shouldn't show off about it, it's just a gift which Hashem gave him. Hashar moishech b'koychei l'fi shechukahu. The shar can schlep heavy things, but that's just its nature, that's what it's able to do. Kein mishu chochem, so too, a person who is wise, who l'fi shetivoi mevioi lazeh, because his nature gives him to the, he's got a good brain. Hashem gave him a good cup. Ve'ilu oisa she'achshav eina chochem kamayhu, hoya loish seichativi kamayhu, hoya mischachem kamayshin ischachem hu. And if the guy next to him, who's struggling in the exams, or struggling in life, or whatever it may be, because he hasn't got as sharp a brain as the first person, if he was given that brain, he'd also be able to achieve what the first person could achieve. So don't show arrogance about it, because the next guy can do the same. If Cain ain't Khan, lis nasiv lis guys, there's no room to get arrogant. And a person who's granted this wisdom, then he should give it to whoever mishatzarech aleha. For Kamama Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, im lamad Torah harbe al tachzik tov la'atzmecha, etc. In other words, arrogance, anova, the flip sides of the same coin. Anova is simply recognizing your talents, but recognizing there are gifts from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and recognizing against the enormous and infinite power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're nothing. Imagine you stand at the top of the Empire State Building. Maybe you've done that. And you look down, and you know there's quite a way down there. And you see cars and you see people. They're like matchsticks. People walking around tiny, literally, like Rashi says in the Molim Yesh B'Kromim. Imagine a person who's 6 foot six tall. And imagine standing next to a person who's 4 foot six foot, 4 foot six tall. They're standing next to each other. From the perspective of the top of the Empire State Building, you're not going to tell the difference. So why are you getting arrogant looking down at the guy who's a couple of a foot or two taller, shorter than you? Klape HaKadosh Baruch Hu, nothing. So what is Anova? Anova is A, recognizing your talents, but recognizing they're just God-given, and therefore it's not appropriate to show off about it, and also recognizing it, the relative to the Koichos, the infinite ability of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, they're nothing. That's really it. This is borne out by many stories, but let me just share one or two, because I think it brings out the point very well. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, right, one of the greats of, amazing to say, the last century. He died already in the mid-90s. So, many, many stories about Shlomo Zalman, one of the giant poskim personalities of the 20th century. On one hand, he abhorred kovod. He ran away from it, he hated it. He detested it with a passion. One time, he was, of course, honored to be a tzaddik at a bris on many occasions. One time he was given to be a tzaddik. That evening, Rav Shlomo Zalman called the moel. I forget the name of the moel. And he said to him, you know, Shlomo Zalman here. So the fellow said, I know many Shlomo Zalmans. Which Shlomo? Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Ah, that's Shlomo Zalman. He takes the week, how can I help you, Roshiva? How can I help you? So he said, look, you were the moel. And before you, and he did a lot of brisn in Yerushalayim, he was the moel. He said, I've done this, I've told you before, but when you call out that I'm going to be sandak, you call out, Hagon, Hagadol, Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is mechubad with sandakos. He said, please don't do that. He says, I've told you before, don't do that. Just Shlomo Zalman Auerbach is mechubad with sandakos. If you do it again, I refuse to be a sandak when you're going to be the moel. He couldn't tolerate it. I told someone today, Sri Kushalevsky, one of the giants, one of the giant Roshivas of our time, an enormous Talmud Chacham. A friend of mine was learnt in his yeshiva, and I remember he told me that one time there was some asif, there was some gathering, and Sri Kushalevsky was the speaker. And the master, the MC, the master of ceremonies, introducing him, the chairman, used very flowery, hyperbolic language to introduce him. All deserving, of course. But Rsvi couldn't, he also detested the cover that he was being given. And he heard, he was muttering something under his breath quietly. My friend was there, and he noticed, and his yeshiva bacha, he wants to know a bit more. So he came closer, I don't know how he did it, but he came closer to hear what was Rsvi muttering under his breath. And he got close enough to hear, and he said, he was saying, repeating to himself the mantra, Hakina Vataiva Vakovud Mitsin Isaldim Elohim. Just repeating again and again and again, Hakina Vataiva Vakovud Mitsin Elohim. Jealousy, lust, and honor will remove a person from this world. Don't get too caught up in it. Now, that's on one side. On the other side, the same Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who detested honor, once had a very interesting case. A couple came to him. They had a special needs child who was in his teenage years. And they had researched and looked into the best school home for him. And it was a certain, an excellent school where he would be there, you know, for board and lodging as well. And it was great for him. But the kid was resisting it. He didn't want to go. And they came to Shlomo Zalman and they explained to him, this is going to be the best place for him. We can't cope at home. It's perfect for him. But he doesn't want to go. Can you help us? What should we do? So Shlomo Zalman said, it was a big pekeach. He said, I've got an idea. He knew the boy, he knew the family. He said, bring him in to me and I'll see what I can do. So the family made an appointment. They came back and they brought him in. And Shlomo Zalman sat down with him. And he said, do you know who I am? So the boy, wasn't sure. He says, my name is Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I am the Rosh Yeshiva of Kol Torah Yeshiva, and I am one of the poskim of this generation. That when other great rabbis are unsure how to rule, they'll come to me. And I want to give you smicha. I want to make you a rabbi. I can't be in all places at one time. And I know there's a certain school, and I want you to be the rabbi of that school, that you will be my mashkiach there. You come back on a monthly basis and report back to me the spiritual matters that are going on in that shul. And the kid, can you imagine? He just got smicha from Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. He felt $1 million. So, with pleasure, Rebbe. I'll go. I'll do it for you. But it means you've got to move in there. bring his parents in. Are you okay with that? Yeah, we're okay with it. And that's how he set it up. But the point I'm bringing out is there's part of the persuasion. Rosh Shlomo Zalman knew who he was. He knew he was one of the leading Rosh Hashivas and, you know, one of the greatest poskim of our time. And on the same hand, he abhorred kavod. That's the point. Anova says in Mitzvah Shalom is to know who you are, not to be, you know, to be kachagovim, but to have that healthy sense of self-esteem, but not to get arrogant about it. And many, many other stories about that. Moshe Feinstein, one time, that he was, a fellow came over to him, and he challenged Moshe on a certain psak, and he says, don't you know the Prima Godin doesn't say like you're saying? Moshe Feinstein said to this fellow, he says, I've learned that Prima Godin 296 times. I know what the Prima Godin is saying. And I've ruled, and notwithstanding that, I've ruled how I've ruled. They know who they are. The Chasam Sofer, one time, the Aguna Shilas, they tell a story, Rav brings this, that the Chasam Sofer, a difficult question came to him. And this was, it was in his time, a certain case of an Aguna, which is, of course, a tragic case, where a husband has disappeared, or whatever the story is, and or has not given a get. And the question is, can the woman remarry? And it's a difficult shaila. On one hand, you need enormous sensitivity. On the other hand, you're dealing with the cases of Veisha Sish, of Chiyuve Misa, of very serious issues. And various Rabbonim at the time were writing long tshuvas. There was a lot of debate back and forth about this specific case. And some were saying she can remarry, some were saying she can't remarry. And a big, they brought it to the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer heard the facts of the case, and in half an hour he penned a tshuva, being matir this lady, allowing this lady to get remarried. And they said to the Chasam Sofer, they said, you know, this is you sure that you're okay with that? Half an hour, and you're ready for this tshuva to be distributed. So he said, how can you do it so quickly? And he said, I am the posek of this generation. And HaKadosh Baruch has given me this koyach, I'm okay with this. They knew who they were. That's really what healthy self-esteem is. Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the words in the Torah of he was an olav mikol adam. He wrote them. Because he knew, because it's just a matter of self-awareness, knowing who you are. And if a person denies his own talents, that's a very dangerous thing. There's a Yalkut Shimoni. Listen to this. Look at that box at the end of paragraph 1. Ksiv kabeid es Hashem mehoincha. A person has got to honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu mehoincha. Literally means with your wealth. So with your wealth, honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mimashe chonencha. But the Yalkut says, it means more than that. What does it mean? Honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu with that which He has given you. The gracious gifts which He has given you. For example, Shem Hoya Koylcha Noi, if a person's got a beautiful voice, Avor Lifnei Ateva, be the chazan. Sing. Says the Yalkut Shimoni, Chia ben Achayis Yisrael Beloza HaKapar Hoya Koylcha Noi, he had a beautiful voice. For Yoyim Eloi Chia B'ni Amoyed V'Kabeid Es Hashem Mimashechon Nancho. Honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu from that which He has given you. And then the Yalkut says a famous story. Novos, remember him from Novi? Novos hoya koyle noy, he had a beautiful voice. For he oyle Yerushalayim, he would be oyle regel. For he called Yisrael miskansin nishmas koyle. Everyone came in to go hear his voice, his musaf. Pamachas, one time, loy ola. He didn't want to daven for the omet. Yeah, he had a sore throat, he didn't want to, you know. Veheyidu alov b'nei Belial, what happened? Certain unscrupulous people came and falsely testified against him, and he was lost from the world. Yeah, with the story with the Zevel Eliyahu HaNavi. Mi garam lo, who caused him this downfall that someone would covet his vineyard, and as a result of that, false Edom would come along, be hired, that he would be killed. It was a punishment for that one time. He didn't go to Yerushalayim to daven for the Omet. To be Oyle Regal, Lekabit HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mashechonnoi, to honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu from that which He gave him. So you see, a person has been given talents, whatever those talents are, and a person denies them or doesn't utilize them in honor HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's Nachrayas. Talents and abilities and opportunities are Nachrayas. That's really what they are. So I think that's one thing, the one idea that emerges from the Parsha. Okay, let's see. Let's do number two. I'm fearful that number three is not going to happen. This, number two, a very, very interesting point. The pasuk says, "Vayahas kolev esom." So after the Meraglim presented their presentation, then it was bad news. It was dangerous. Why? Because the rabble, they were the ten Meraglim, were sort of stirring up Klal Yisrael, and they all started shouting and screaming that we're not going into going to Eretz Yisrael. This is not going to happen. Vayahas kolev esom, and Kolev silenced the people. Vayoyim, and he said, "Oloi na lev yorashnu." We will go up and we will inherit the land. Now Rashi tells us a bit of background that goes on behind the scenes. Listen to this. Vayahas Kolev. Says Rashi, what does that mean? Hishtik es kulam. He silenced the crowd. The pasuk says, Vayahas Kolev esom el Moshe. What does the pasuk? Kolev silenced the people. And it should have just carried on. Vayoyman, it said, Oloi na'aleh. What does it mean, el Moshe? Says Rashi. In other words, he silenced the people by saying to them, "Listen up, let me tell you about Moshe Rabbeinu." Says Rashi, he shouted and said, "You think this is only what Ben Amram said?" Hashemeya, the person who had just heard all the ten meraglim, listened. He thought that he was going to speak against him, disparaging against Moshe Rabbeinu. So they wanted to say more things against Moshe Rabbeinu. Because they were already turned against Moshe Rabbeinu, because what the Meraglim had said, they were waiting and anticipating to hear more derogatory remarks against Moshe Rabbeinu. So Shosku Kulam Lishma Agnusoy. So as soon as he mentioned El Moshe, let me tell you something else about Moshe Rabbeinu, everyone was quiet. Omar v'halikora, but then he sort of changed tack, as it were, but this was his intention all along. Says Rashi, Omar, he said, v'halikora l'anos hayom. You think that's all he did? He split the sea, v'hayri l'anos hamon, he brought the mon down for us, v'higit l'anos haslov, and he gave us the slav to eat. And therefore, oloi na'ale, afidu b'shamayim, even if we have to go up to heaven, v'hu oime asus sulomis, make ladders, v'alu, and go up, Shom to heaven, Natsliach b'chol derachov. We'll be Matsliach in everything he says. So, Kole very cleverly explains Chazal, explains Rashi, silenced the crowd, thinking they thought that he was going to say more things against Moshe Rabbeinu, but he got their attention and then suddenly he diverted them and said great things, which sort of calmed them down. That's the Rashi. The difficulty is this: if you've got a mob who are waiting and sort of waiting to pounce, and they've been sort of stirred up by the Meraglim, they're now not going into Eretz Yisrael. So all that Kolev is doing is a delaying tactic. As soon as he starts saying, you know, v'halo korelon es hayom, he's saying positive things, they're going to just, you know, shout him down. If it's an angry mob not interested in hearing any positive things about Moshe Rabbeinu, this is just a delaying tactic. It's, what's he going to give him? 10 seconds? 20 seconds? So what's he gained from it? How's it effective? The answer is this. This is a very important idea. When a person is in a moment of passion, of chaos, of agitation, of irritation, it's very easy to fly off the handle. The key is not to respond immediately and spontaneously, but just stop for a second. You know, the famous Meister with a Rebbe, that a couple come in and they're having problems with Nebuchadnezzar Shalom Bais. So the Rebbe, and they want a bracha. How can they solve that? He's screaming at her, she's screaming at him, there's shouting in the house, terrible. They want to go for the Rebbe for some guidance. So the Rebbe gives them, famously, a special water. And he says, "You see this water? This is what I want you to do. Special water. As soon as you're feeling angry, you're about to shout at your wife, I want you to take this water, drink a sip, and that's the antidote." And the same to the wife. Fine. Special miracle waters from the Rebbe, of course we'll try it. As they get home, I don't know when the next argument broke out, presumably quite quickly, he's about to start screaming and shouting. He takes the blessed water, and he takes a sip, and drinks it. Doing his trick. It's working. Now, of course, the Rebbe knew this is tap water. There's nothing magical about this water. What's magical about this is He won't just fly off the handle and scream and shout at the first opportunity. He'll just, that those first 10, 20 seconds are critical. Just calm. And that's the Peleyoyet says a beautiful few words. Hashtika be'sakas kamayim le'ish. Shtika, at a moment of anger, are like water for a fire. What a beautiful phrase. Hashtika be'sakas kamayim le'ish. Silence at a time of passion and anger are like water to a fire. That is the best way to quell, to quash the anger. The famous story is said of Rabbi Michiel Michel of Zlotsov. Now let me share with you quickly this story. It brings out the point. Rabbi Michiel Michel, you may have heard this story, but it's a well-known story. Rabbi Michiel Michel had, with his father, was a Rebbe, and he inherited his father's tefillin. And the Hasidim were desperate to use and to buy these tefillin from him. But this was an heirloom, a family heirloom. He wouldn't part with it for love or money, even though he was poor as anything, and he could have done with the money. And his wife, on many occasions, said to him, look, you've got to sell the tefillin. We haven't got what to eat. Things are so difficult. You've got to sell the tefillin. And Rabbi Michiel Michel refused at all costs to sell his father's tefillin. We'll survive, we'll be okay, etc., etc. One time, it was a month or two before Sukkot, and in those days, in Eastern Europe, getting hold of Arba Minim was very, very hard. And the normal fellow who came, they couldn't get hold of the Arba Minim. And there was one fellow in town who had an Esrog, and he was passing through, and Rabbi Michiel Michel very much wanted to buy this Esrog. So what did he do? He sold his father's tefillin, and with that money, he bought the Esrog. He came home, happy as Larry. This is now got his own Esrog. And he comes home, his wife suddenly sees him holding an Esrog. You know, this costs enormous amounts of money. How did you get that? Where did you get it from? So he had to come clean. He had to say that he's managed to get the only Esrog in town. And he did so by spending a lot of money. But he sold his father's tefillin. And she went crazy. She took the Esrog and she smashed it against the table and broke off the pitta. Now, and I'm not, you know, you've got to live a life of poverty and to understand where, but it's a natural reaction, no doubt. But famously, he turned around to her and said, look, now I haven't got my father's tefillin, I haven't got a kosher Esrog. But one thing that's not going to be taken away is my shalom bias. Because a person could easily respond in kind and scream and shout, but if a person, hashtika be'ezakas k'mayim le'esh, a person can be silent, it's so easy to talk about it now. But in the moment of excitement and agitation, it's much harder, of course. But that's the key, hashtika be'ezakas k'mayim le'esh. And one final point, Mr. Shem, we'll have to do the paragraph 3 another time. But a beautiful addition to this is this. Eish is always an example of chaos, of fire and agitation, especially on Shabbos. Where I saw the Sefer he brings, Rabbi Leitner, that's why I was a Sefer by Rabbi Leitner, he brings this. The Zohar says that Eish, particularly chaos on Shabbos, is to be avoided at all costs. The Pasuk says that when we learn Hilchos Shabbos, please God, we'll do it, we'll get there. When we learn Hilchos Shabbos, very little is actually said in the Torah itself. But one thing that we know, what there's one pasuk. What's one pasuk? Lo yisvaru eish b'chol mishveseichem b'yom haShabbos. You mustn't kindle a fire on Shabbos. And again, the Gemara discusses it. Why that example of all the 39 examples? But al pi, what we're saying, the Zohar brings that eish. There's one time in particular where you should avoid kas at all costs. That is Shabbos. Lo yisvaru eish b'chol mishveseichem b'yom haShabbos. Eish on Shabbos at all costs, because that's the time where it's easy perhaps to get agitated, to lose one's cool, and the effects of that are more devastating than they are on the 6 days of the week. So two ideas and not three ideas, unfortunately, but Mitzvah Hashem another year. The opening pasuk, Shomro Inus Anafilim V'Nihi Beinenu K'chagovim V'Cheino In Beinehem. How important it is to have healthy self-esteem. A person has a healthy self-esteem, then other people will treat you in the same way. But if a person walks around like a schmatzer, people will treat him like a schmatzer. That's how life works. And therefore, how could the Meraglim possibly know that they looked like grasshoppers in the eyes of the giants? The answer is, according to Rashi, because they heard. But according to this approach, the answer is because they felt themselves as grasshoppers. So therefore, they automatically assume, well, that's how they're going to look at us. That's not true anova. True anova is understanding what your koiches are, but just realizing they're a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's no mockum, there's no point, there's no area here to get arrogance about them. As seen by Rosh Hashanah Mezalman, as seen by the Mrs. Sharm, etc., etc. And lastly, the silence. How did it, the strategy of Kolev help? It's just a delaying tactic. The answer is that's exactly how it works. By delaying that spontaneous outburst and just calming it down for the first 10, 20 seconds, you've lanced the boil. If you've lanced the boil, that's how to deal with the kas, and then hopefully it's much easier to deal with in a logical, more calm and sensible way. Shabbos.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.